Hey there, look at us.
Hey, we're back.
We are back. They let us back in the building after last week.
Week two.
Week two already.
I thought when the lights went out at the end of our show we were canceled, but apparently not.
I believe that's what the common knowledge was, is that, but apparently the reports of our cancellation have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, true. Well, I'm Roz Davis.
And I'm Victoria Davis.
And welcome back to Random Walk. It's our podcast? Vcast?
It is a vlog, I believe, okay. Or maybe it's a video podcast, a vidcast, perhaps? I don't know,
but there's also a podcast. Facebook Live on the moment, right?
We are live on Facebook. We are also live, I believe, at, let me see, it is hcradio.com? No, it's Hunterdon County, My.
I guess you're going to have to follow up on that.
Hunterdonchamber.org, I believe. And then there is some radio stuff, and you can go find it. I've got to get the actual full URL. Yeah. I look silly. Silly me.
Oh.
Yeah, but just Google Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, and you will get to the page.
That is awesome. So we actually have a guest tonight.
We do. We have our very first actual guest. He is on the phone, and he is a dear, dear friend of us. He is ours. He was actually the most frequent guest on our previous radio show.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes. He has that designation, but that's not really what he's famous for.
So he's going to talk a little bit about what he's famous for and something new. He did a new endeavor, which was huge, a huge undertaking, and he's going to talk to you about that, I believe.
All right. Well, it is a huge undertaking, and we're going to be great to talk to him. So let's just take a little break for a couple of messages, and then we'll be on the air with our dear friend, an author and musician, Chip Murgat. Hang on, everybody.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Okay, folks, we're back, and hopefully joining me on the phone lines is none other than author and musician Chip Murgat. Good evening, Chip.
Good evening. Hi, Vic. How are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm currently reclining on my bed. This is a beautiful way to do an interview.
Wow. Well, you know, I mean, you always did join us live in the studio, and given the circumstances, you'll certainly be just as effective doing the interview from your home.
Perhaps even more so.
Perhaps so. Maybe it'll be nice and relaxed. You can. There used to be an old-timey talk show in England, I want to say back in the 90s, where they actually, the entire stage for the talk show was a bed, so people would come and they're...
I love that idea, yes.
I think it's time to maybe revive that.
Yeah, I went out to Giant Food Store in my neighborhood last night at about 10:45 to pick up something for my son that he needed for a school project. And I said to the guy as I was checking out, I said, this is the first time I've even been out to a store in months. I've been pretty isolated and keeping very safe because I'm kind of in a high-risk group. But to talk about a pleasanter subject, I love hearing you gals again. You sound better than ever, and we all three of us are currently involved in brand new exciting ventures, so I couldn't be happier for all of us.
That's great. That is great. So, Chip, you're here actually to talk about some of those exciting new adventures. I've been telling everybody that you have a new book out. This is your second book, by the way.
Yes.
And yeah, so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm happy to talk about it, and this is my first radio interview I've ever done for it, so I'm hoping it's the first of many, and also in the future I'll double back gladly to talk to you girls again when I see how the wind is blowing with the book. But so far initial reaction to it is very exciting for me. And it was a long time coming. It's a book of fictional short stories, and it's called There Must Be a Better World Somewhere. And that title story is a story I wrote about a young man who moves to Chicago and becomes involved a little bit in the music scene. So the idea is that I have called upon my decades of life as a singer-songwriter now to write this book of short stories. In other words, I didn't suddenly veer off to a completely different direction. My stories, almost all of them, have some connection to my musicianship. And in fact, Vic, one of the stories is a story that I conceived many years ago, but I never completed the story until this past year to get this out into the book. And that's a story that is an expansion of an actual song of mine. And the song is called Girl on the High Wire, and the story is called The Girl on the High Wire. And that song is a song I wrote when I was 19 years old, and it got me signed to a record deal in New York City, and it got me my first producer, which was David Spinoza, who produced Walking Man for James Taylor. And so that song really was a fundamental cornerstone of my music career. And now it's a short story, and it's kind of, even in the first paragraph of the story, I call it a fairy tale. It is kind of a fairy tale, and I wanted to explore that genre, that literary genre, where, you know, it's not exactly realistic. I think some literary types might call it magic realism is the term they apply to it. But I'm looking forward to getting feedback from some of my musical friends on that story and all the others, too. Last night I heard from a dear friend of mine who is a novelist who lives in Italy. And he sent me a very glowing email that I'm still quite excited about. His name is Doug Mine, and he's from Central Jersey. And he was on Random House with his novel, which is called Champions of the World. And so I was kind of walking on eggshells, wondering how Doug was going to react to my book. And he was raving about it, so I couldn't be happier. But his favorite story in the collection, he said, was a story called Reach Out, I'll Be There, which to 60s music fans is very famous as one of the great Motown songs. It was a number one hit for the Four Tops, and I use it as a device to base this short story on, about a father and a son who kind of bond over that Motown song. So that's, I said a mouthful.
You did. Well, that's great. I know you've worked very hard on this book for many years.
Well, you helped, yeah. So you've been helping along the way and encouraging me. And I'll tell you that if there's any potential authors out there who want a word of advice, this is my word of advice. Of all the things you need to publish a book, you need talent, you need self-discipline, you need some money, because I self-published it, so it costs a little bit of money to do that. Not much, but the number one thing you need most of all is just guts. You need intestinal fortitude, because you don't know how people are going to react to it. And you know, you were the main person who encouraged me at the last mile. You said, you know, don't cut corners now, Chip, because I was so anxious to get it out that I started to imagine that I might want to circumnavigate the editing process, you know, and the editing process was taking so long that I finally was like, let's just get it out there. But you said to me, no, don't rush it at the last minute. And I'm so glad that I didn't rush it. So I've had professional editors working on it, and that takes some intestinal fortitude, like I said, because basically, you know, what's an editor's job? An editor's job is to come back and tell you what's wrong with it, you know? And a lot of writers don't necessarily want to hear negative comments about their writing, you know? So you have to kind of just grit your teeth and say, okay. And for the most part, my editors... it was a professional firm in Kentucky that I used, and I was very, very happy with them. And for the most part, they weren't trying to rewrite my stories. They were just correcting, you know, there's always grammatical errors, there's always spelling errors. And one time the editor corrected a factual error, and I was so... thankful that she did, because, you know, a careful reader will see a factual error and that'll, like, throw off the whole story. It'll throw off the whole narrative. So I'll tell you what that factual error was if you'd like to hear it.
I would.
I have a story in the collection called Detective Story, and it's a fictional story about a modern-day detective, and they still have private investigators out there that you can hire, but they're not like Mannix or Barnaby Jones or any of the TV guys who are always running around and getting into fistfights and shooting at bad guys. The private investigators of today are guys who usually sit in a room 5 days a week in front of a computer screen, you know, and they track down missing persons and they use cell phones and stuff like that. So this is a modern-day detective named Aaron Littlefield that I created, and he gets involved in observing a murder, and then at the end, I'm not going to give away anything, but the murderer does come to his house, and so exactly like my real father, my dad, Nick Murgott, kept in his farm in Kingwood, New Jersey, he kept a loaded revolver, which is a .38 revolver. And so this detective guy that I created has a loaded revolver, and I just used my father's, you know, as a model. And I said in the story that he had to slide the safety off. And the editor told me, guess what, Chip? A .38 revolver doesn't have a safety.
Ooh.
And I went, oh my gosh, that's a critical point. The great writer and writing teacher, John Gardner, who was a big influence on me, Vic and Roz, John Gardner wrote 3 seminal books on the art of fiction. One of them's called The Art of Fiction. The other one's called On Becoming a Novelist. And the third one is called On Moral Fiction. And Gardner calls any work of fiction, he calls it the vivid, continuous dream. He said you're trying to create a vivid, continuous dream in the reader's mind. And so anything that disturbs that dream wakes the reader up for the fact that they're reading fiction. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden, in the middle of it, if you have a factual error, they have to wake up and then go back and go, oh, I'm reading a story here. And so, but that applies to grammatical errors. That applies to spelling errors. If you spell a word completely wrong, all of a sudden people realize that they're reading a written story, you know, and you don't want to wake them up from that dream. And Gardner, I think, was 100% correct about that idea. So that's just an example of where an editor stepped in and made a factual discovery, and so I hopefully didn't wake anybody up.
Well,
that's
you know,
the same with my earlier book, my first book, which you are the illustrator on, you took the photographs for it, which I'm very happy with, and that is a nonfiction book called How to Play the Guitar in 1 Hour. And that's also available on Amazon. By the way, both books are available, easily findable on Amazon by just putting my name into Amazon, Chip Murgott with 2 T's, and you'll find both books instantly. But How to Play the Guitar in 1 Hour is not a fictional dream that you are creating in somebody's mind. It's an instructional book on how to play the guitar, but the same thing applies if you put in an instructional book a factual error. You know, you're going to confuse people forever. And have you ever experienced that? I've experienced, you know, reading the directions to a recording device or something where, you know, on page 3, they have something that's totally wrong, and you go out on the Internet, and now we have the luxury of checking. You know, we do fact checks on these, and you find out that somebody in the Department of Directions you know, put something totally wrong in the directions, you know, and you're trying to build a fireplace in your backyard, and they're telling you the wrong way to do it, you know, which will literally drive you into the asylum, you know.
Yeah, it can be really painful, especially when you're dealing with instructions. And I do have a confession to make that the word fluorescent can be spelled 2 different ways, and usually in this country it has an O-R, and outside of this country a lot of time it's a U-R, and somehow I felt that the U-R must have looked prettier or something, and I managed to put the word fluorescent throughout my book, How to 10 Cheap Tricks to Haunt Your Halloween. So it's kind of funny, is now in there as flower-escent rather than fluorescent.
Okay.
So,
yeah, that's, you know, I don't think that's going to wake anybody up from the beauty of your book. And so I'm glad you brought your book up, because you and I are both leading the way in a certain sense for people who want to self-publish. And so I assume you use the exact same method that I've used, which is to go through the Amazon system. And the Amazon system is called, what is it called now, CreateSpace?
CreateSpace was the old name. It was actually, CreateSpace was the old actual website that Amazon purchased to bring their media. I believe it's Kindle Direct Publishing these days, and that will yield both an electronic book and a paper book, one that can be trade paperback.
It's KDP, you're right. And so here's a publishing nugget that may be controversial to some or not. It may help some people who might be planning to write their own book. But I have decided on this new book, There Must Be a Better World Somewhere, not to do an electronic version of it. And as a matter of fact, some experts have kind of waved me off of doing that, because Kindle has now a system that's very much like Spotify in music, where they just lump everything together, and they will give your book away for free to a lot of people, and then you'll get this like really, really small percentage of royalties where everybody can just read it for free if they, it's not for free, they subscribe to the service, and then they read it for way, way less money than you would get for the hard copy. So for the time being, I'm actually keeping my book as a physical object that you can buy, hold, and read. You know, it's a great invention. I think it was thousands of years ago. I don't know. No, 1,500 years ago when the printing press was invented. So, you know, it still hasn't been surpassed by holding a screen. Don't we get enough of looking at screens every day, you know?
That's true. That's true. And I think that also is a nice format for a fictional book.
Yeah, I agree too. And I might add now at this point, bringing in a little bit of the fact that I'm still an active performing musician, although performing, of course, has been tamped down over the last year from the COVID experience. But I am recording, and I'm working on a new record. And guess what? I may use the exact same method for my new record as I'm using for the book. And this might be a pioneering move that I'm there's very few people who are doing this. One of them is Michelle Schacht. Remember her?
Right.
Michelle Schacht has taken all of her stuff off of the digital services, and the only way you can get a Michelle Schacht record now, even her older records, which she bought the rights to, the only way you can get one is to buy the physical copy from her. And my new CD, which has got a working title of Solo Acoustic, is the name of it right now.
Chip, are you still there? Chip, it sounds like the phone line has indeed dropped. Well, I think this is a good moment for a break, so I'm sorry that that, it's definitely knocked out, so I think we're going to have to restart that. So, if you can hang on, and I think we're going to take a little break here, and maybe we'll see if we can get Chip back on.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
All right, we're back here on Random Walk Hunterdon. Once again, I'm your hostess, Victoria Ann Davis. Joining me, the lovely co-hostess, Rosalind Davis.
Good evening.
Good evening. And I think we're going to just take a moment. You've prepared, while I work on Chip, you've prepared some news stories for us tonight.
I did. Yeah, I did some news stories. So you're going to work on trying to get Mr. Murgat back. We had some technical difficulties with the phone dropping. Wine in Space.
Wine in Space.
Exactly.
Is this a story about blood wine? Klingon blood wine?
No, this is more like they want to see the effects of wine and how space affects wine. So we will serve no fine wine before it comes back from space. What? Well, a dozen bottles of French wine has made their descent into Earth's atmosphere and splashed down in the Gulf of Mexico on the last week after orbiting the planet from when they came and for aging for more than a year. According to USA Today and the Associated Press, the SpaceX cargo Dragon spacecraft splashed down in the waters off Tampa carrying thousands of pounds of research materials and gear, including a case of French Bordeaux, hundreds of grapevines, mice, and 3D-engineered heart tissues. Now, I don't know what's going on with the rest of the cargo, but I do know that the wine won't be open until the end of February. Luxembourg-based Space Cargo Unlimited will open a bottle or two for tasting and then chemical testing. Nicholas Guam, CEO of Space Cargo Unlimited, said the experiment's primary objective is agricultural science. How space affected the wine's sedimentation and bubbles is among researchers' interests. Winemaking and maturation is an extremely relevant multi-component biological process involving key elements such as yeast, bacteria, crystals, colloids, and polyphenols. Very little is known about how the taste and chemical composition of wine is affected during the aging process, the company said in a statement at the time of the bottle's launch. Part of the motivation for the experiments, Guam said, stems from climate change and the need for agricultural products, including grapes, for winemaking to adapt. Our goal is to tackle the solution of how we're going to have an agricultural tomorrow that is both organic and healthy and able to feed humanity. And we think space has the key, Guam said. The wine bottles were packed inside steel cylinders and remain uncorked since they were sent into orbit back in November of 2019. Guam, who will be among those tasting the Space Bordeaux, says he hopes the experiment proves useful for future space explorers to enjoy the drink on the moon and Mars, and possibly beyond. Well, he didn't say that part, but I made that part up. He also hopes it pairs with a soft, ripened St. Albrecht or a creamy Chèvre. No, he actually didn't really say that either, but both cheeses would pair well with a Bordeaux, which is your wine pairing tip of the day. Guam said, being French, it's part of life to have some good food and good wine. And I happen to agree with him.
I would actually say cashew nut cheese would also pair well with those as well.
I looked it up.
All right, you did.
I Googled it. I admit it.
All right. Well, then, I think we're going to try and take another shot at this. It looks like our phone 9 light might be working. So let's see. Hey, Chip, are you there?
I'm back. Hi.
Can't keep you away, can we?
Exactly. I'd be camped out on your doorstep.
Well, it is a cold night out tonight, so maybe next week. Who knows?
Oh, well, by the way, let me ask you, where are you physically doing the show from?
I am in Flemington, New Jersey. I am at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce headquarters and in the Unity Bank Center for Business and Entrepreneurship. The studio.
Great.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures on Facebook. It looks like a really nice little space that you guys are in there.
Yeah, this space was actually designed and built for Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
Beautiful. And yes, I love Roz's expansions on the story and beyond Mars, beyond the universe. People are drinking wine everywhere.
Wow, perhaps. And you know, I think it's great. And I think it's maybe a favorable alternative to Romulan Ale as well.
There you go. Well, I'm doing my part. I'm supplying people with fictional stories to carry them away to a wonderland. I even, you know, I have kind of advertised the book as a little island, a little oasis away from all the hustle and bustle and the, you know, constant news stories that we face every day. There's a barrage of bad news, a barrage of controversy. And I even went so far, Vic, as to write a story called The Treehouse on the Island, because I've always loved that genre. The desert island story is one of the most beloved literary tropes in history. And you know what it all started with, as I did a little research into this? It all started with Robinson Crusoe 300 years ago, and that was based on a true story. So, you know, it's got these desert island and island stories have a lot of credence to people. One of my favorites in the culture is the movie 6 Days and Seven Nights with Harrison Ford and Anne Heche. You know, it seems like we're willing to suspend our disbelief often about stories about people on a desert island. And that's what my story does. It's about a couple that fall in love on a desert island after being in a plane crash. And so it is a virtual escape. But now let's look to the future for a minute in 2021 as the vaccination gets around. I think we're going to see a real renaissance in the next year to public performing. There's one thing I've just noticed on Facebook and among my friends is that people are really hungry to see live music again. A lot of people have missed that more than almost anything, you know, and they can stay at home for a lot of things, but nothing has been able to take the place. No amount of TV watching or YouTube videos can take the place of actually going out and seeing somebody. So one of my home clubs, speaking of wine, is the places that I love to play is the New Hope Winery in New Hope, Pennsylvania. So it's very likely that I'm probably going to return there in the next 6 months to do some more gigs.
Wow. You know, and the last time I actually saw live music is right before the shutdown. It was you performing in the poorhouse at New Hope Winery.
Oh, there you go. I was glad to see you that occasion. They have a big, big building out behind the winery, which is the real concert venue for name acts. And one night when I was playing in the poorhouse, which is the beautiful little restaurant that they have, and Steve Forbert was scheduled to play that night. So as I was packing up my gear at the end of my shift, so to speak, Steve came in the building to say hello, and I was able to reminisce with him. I used the same drummer, a great drummer named Barry Lazarowitz, I used on my first album, and he was on Steve's first album also all those years ago. And so we compared notes, and Barry Lazarowitz also played drums on Janice Ian's great record at 17. And I think I told Steve that night that Barry was the only drummer I've ever played with that asked me for a lyric sheet. And so as we were recording the song, he was actually reading the lyrics. And I don't think it's my imagination. I swear you can hear that in his playing. You know, he's doing fills and things like that that are really based on the lyrical content of the song. So, by the way, there's a little footnote in my book in the introduction section. There's a footnote that says all of Chip's music can be heard on iTunes. So, yes, Amazon and iTunes are both the same situation. All you have to do is go to either one of those sites and put in my name, Chip Murgaugh, and on iTunes you'll find 12 or 13 different recording projects there. And you've helped me with several of them. And so my first album, the one that I did for London Records, which cost $83,000 and was produced by David Spinoza, that's the album that has the song "Girl on the High Wire" on it. So, you know, I own that album now, and it's a great blessing to me to be able to kind of, I don't want to just speak in terms of marketing, but to cross market this song and this short story at the same time is very exciting, you know. Years ago when I was planning this book of short stories, you know, I had this grand, very ambitious plan, Vic, and the plan was to write a song for each one of the stories. But, you know, I soon found out that the reality of it is that's such a Herculean task to try to write a song and record a song for each short story that I gave up on it. I'm just happy to get the book out.
Yeah, I mean, that is a Herculean task, but just because you didn't have a chance to do it before the book came out doesn't mean that you can't do this in subsequent years. You can't write a song this year or maybe next year.
That is so true. You truer words were never spoken. You know, a book has a long shelf life, maybe even longer than a record. Although I really designed my records to last, and my biggest sellers are my two Christmas albums and my hymns albums. I have an album called Hymns for Acoustic Guitar, which is all instrumental versions of old hymns. And I also have an album called This Little Light, which is hymns for the ukulele, believe it or not. And so they have a long shelf life. But, yeah, the book is going to be there. So if I want to keep writing songs to the book as time goes by, I certainly will, and that's a great point you made.
So true, and always so much good quality, and it's amazing that you bring up the Christmas album. It certainly was a part of our holiday celebration this year as we were unwrapping the gifts, so it's always good to be accompanied by that wonderful Christmas songs, Christmas carols, Silent Night, which... someday, maybe next holiday season, you can be back and tell us a little bit more about those songs. Hopefully, we can all be in person then. It will be great.
Oh, when we're in person, I'll have my guitar with me, and I'll play for you as I used to do on your earlier show. And let me tell you a brief little anecdote about Silent Night, because it's gone through two printings, and... So it's been like an ambassador for me around the world, and it lives on in other countries. You know, in Europe, there are many people who've obtained it. And so I've got a bunch of colorful stories about the people who have heard it, including Bonnie Raitt and, you know, numerous others. But I think one of my most enjoyable anecdotes to relate to you is a couple of years ago now, I was here in my house in Bucks County, and I got a phone call in December, and I looked at the ID, and it was a woman named Trudy Taylor calling me, and I thought, oh my gosh, I know who Trudy Taylor is. And when I picked up the phone, I said, Mrs. Taylor, and it was James Taylor's mother.
Oh my.
Who was 90 at the time. Sadly, she has passed away. She passed away, I think, at the age of 93. And she was just this lovely, encouraging lady who called to thank me for this Christmas album, Silent Night. And we had a wonderful conversation, and she encouraged me in several ways, including... She said, don't forget to play live music in your living room, you know, for people. And that's one of the things I live by. You know, we have great family jam sessions when we get together with the family, which we'll do again once we all get vaccinated. And we'll be back again having these great family jam sessions. And so that was one of the things she encouraged. And she also encouraged me to not forget the elderly and to play for people in nursing homes. And I said, Mrs. Taylor, the last time I played a nursing home was a week and a half ago.
Wow.
So I was happy to be able to report that to her. So, yes, my Christmas album has been a great little ambassador around the world. And then a couple of years ago now, two Christmases ago, I recorded another Christmas album for the tipple, which is a 10-stringed Martin instrumental. It looks like a little guitar, but it sounds like a mandolin. Hmm. And what is the name of that album? I've drawn a blank for a minute. It's
Angels We Have Heard.
We Have Heard is what the name of that album is. So I'm looking forward in the future to hearing from more people who've been listening to that album around Christmas time.
Right. Well, Chip, we're just about out of time for the two of us to talk tonight, but people want to find more about you. I know you have a website, but you're mostly on Facebook, right? That's a great way to find you.
Yeah, Facebook is a good way to find me. And so Chip Murgott with two T's, M-E-R-G-O-T-T. We also have a website with all of the albums called notebook-records.com. So it's got a hyphen in the middle, notebook-records.com. And but, you know, I'm easily findable by just Googling my name, too. So Google is like a catch-all place that, you know, 30 things will come up. And I think the first thing that comes up now is the new book when you put my name in. So There Must Be a Better World Somewhere comes up on Amazon if you just Google my name. So that's been very convenient. Well, I thank you so much for having me. I feel great to be back in the fold, and I'll start working on a new streak to be the most the guest with the mostest.
All right. Well, you're already in the lead. So thank you for being on the program tonight, Chip.
My pleasure. God bless you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, and my best to your family.
Okay, you too. Say hi to your mom for me.
You got it.
All right.
Bye. Have a good night. All right, that was Chip Murgott, musician and author of There Must Be a Better World Somewhere, and you can find him wherever you Google, really. So we're going to take a tiny break, and we're going to be back with some entertainment news right after this.
You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@100in-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy 100in, buy local. Visit www.100inchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
All right, and that was something very informative about our programming here on 100inchamberradio.com, on 100in Chamber Radio. And joining me back tonight is the lovely co-hostess with the mostest, Rosalind Davis.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
So, yeah, so earlier we talked about some wine in space. I didn't know if you had any comments to...
You know, I didn't know. I thought in space no one could hear you whine. So I'm actually very, very relieved to know that there is indeed wine in space. And that makes me want to travel there all the more. So
well, it came back, and they're going to test it. But it made me think about... You know, various libations in space fiction or science fiction. So I didn't know if you had any comments about those types of libations or...
I don't know, with the Milky Way, you know... Hey,
why did
I turn the light on? I've seen the light.
Milky Way. That's the password.
That's the magic password is Milky Way.
I don't understand that at all.
Yeah. Interesting, in high school astronomy class, they talked about how there are actual clouds of alcohol out in the galaxy, and they are 200 proof. I thought, Milky Way, that would be a great name for a bar, and it probably is. Of course, it's the name of a candy bar, too, but I mean specifically a place to enjoy libations. But, you know, it being dry January, I don't want to drive anybody to the bottle. I want, you know, if you're feeling the need to keep it dry, keep it cleansing, can always try a mocktail.
Mocktail of the week. We're doing that at least for the month of January.
At least for the month of January. We'll see where it goes from there.
It's supposed to be dry January, but I think a lot of people during the pandemic has even given up that kind of hope for right now. But if you are one of those people who don't drink. And
for any number of reasons.
For any number of reasons. Or you are participating in dry January. I have no idea why. But... no, but if you are, Victoria, you have a mocktail, so why don't you share
I do. The mocktail I have it. This is a very well-known mocktail. It's called the Presbyterian, and it's very simply, you want to take a Collins glass, maybe put in some crushed or cubed ice, and you fill it 50% with club soda and 50% with ginger ale. And it's that simple.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
All right. So, moving on. The next story is a case for using password, literally password for your password. So check this out. Stefan Thomas, a German-born programmer who lives in San Francisco, forgot the password to his almost $220 million worth of Bitcoin fortune. A decade ago, Thomas was given 7,002 Bitcoins for making an explainer video about how cryptocurrency works, which I think there's a little bit of irony in this story.
There's a lot of irony in this story.
Back then, their value was merely a few dollars each. However, the now 7,002 Bitcoin are worth $220 million. But as luck would have it, the password that would have given Thomas the access has been lost. The currency is loaded on an iron key, which is a small hard drive that holds the private keys to a digital wallet. And apparently, without the exact very long password, if you don't have that after so many tries, it like that's it.
Yeah.
There's no way you're getting into it. It kind of deletes and it's all done. But anyway, Thomas apparently wrote the password on a piece of paper, which was misplaced. He had 10 attempts to guess the password and has tried 8 times. After 2 more failed attempts, the password will encrypt itself, making the wallet impossible to access. The password is a long string of numbers, letters, and characters. Hackers have also offered to try, and someone also suggested hypnosis.
Mm-hmm. I suggest that as well.
Yeah, that was the first thing that came out of your mouth. It's like, hypnosis. Did they really bring that out, like a very long password? I don't know.
Or at least tell you what happened to the piece of paper.
They're like, what? Like, how would that work?
I guess you hook it up to your computer and it asks you for the password. I should know this.
I know that, but if he was under hypnosis, how would they get the password out of him? Would he just remember the keys he stroked? Or would
perhaps.
Write down what he wrote? Like, how would that... I don't know how the hypnosis would work.
But yes.
Anyway, so he has these 2 attempts. Let's see. I lost my place.
Yes. So hackers or hypnosis.
Right. However, it's highly unlikely that the correct password will be retrieved and utilized within the 2 tries that he has left. So the New York Times initially reported Thomas's plight and quoted him saying, "I would just lay in bed and think about it. Then I would go to the computer with some new strategy and it wouldn't work. And I would be desperate again." His story went viral and he gave another interview at KGO TV telling the station time heals all wounds and that he had made peace with his potential loss. He added, "It was actually a really big milestone in my life where I sort of realized how I was going to define my self-worth going forward. It wasn't going to be about how much money I have in my bank account." We're apparently on his iron key.
Apparently not.
But don't despair for Stefan Thomas. He has made other fortunes with Bitcoin and has managed to keep track of his passwords since. Thomas isn't the only Bitcoin owner who has been locked out of his wallet. There is a large amount of Bitcoin collectively out there with an estimated worth of $140 million unable to be retrieved.
Huh. Now, how does that impact the economics of that particular economic system?
Because the Bitcoin is like out there just not being used. I don't know. That's a good question. I guess it just... I don't know.
I guess it's just one of those things that we're going to have to figure out as time goes by. Maybe I need to go watch that video that he made about cryptocurrency because... Or maybe I just need to go out and mine Bitcoin.
I think you need to go out and mine some Bitcoin. And remember your password. You know, now, don't bother. Let's just sit in the dark for the remainder of the show. Next week, I'm going to Venus flytrap it. I think I may have said this last week.
I think so.
I'm
going to
bring in some flameless candles and put them out around me, you know.
I think so. The glamour light is back at home. I should have probably packed it up and brought it today.
They'll work on it, I assume, at some point.
I believe so. They've been working on it.
Anyway, Betty White turned 99 on Sunday.
99, Betty White.
That is incredible. I root for her. I'm like...
Oh, we do. Everybody does.
She's such a great broadcaster. I mean, she was there from pretty much the beginning and you know, she's had this fantastic career, not only as an actress, but in early broadcasting. But anyway, Betty White turned 99 on Sunday, and the landmark birthday, her fans are wondering, what is her secret to a long, healthful life? White has been a beloved actress in Hollywood for more than 7 decades with roles on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, The Golden Girls, and more. Like a fine wine, she seems to only get better with age, and she's become a national treasure for her wit and longstanding career. In an interview with People magazine last Wednesday, she said good genes have played a role in her longevity. I'm blessed with good health, she said, so turning 99 is no different than turning 98. I guess after that point, you know, like, birthdays are just like...
Yeah, so yeah. I had 98 others.
Yeah.
What, you know.
White told people, a sense of humor keeps her going. Don't take yourself too seriously. You can lie to others, not that I would, but you cannot lie to yourself, she added. She spent her 99th birthday relaxing. She previously told Entertainment Tonight, you probably didn't ask, but I'll tell you anyway. What I'm doing for my birthday? Running a mile each morning has been curtailed by COVID, so I'm working on getting the pet set released and feeding the two ducks who come to visit me every day, she said, referencing her 1971 show that featured appearances from celebrities and their pets. So she's reviving a show from like almost 50 years ago.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's what a
pet set.
Yeah, pet set.
Celebrities and their pets.
Wow.
She also shared with Associated Press one especially exciting benefit of her new age. Since I am turning 99, I can stay up as late as I want without asking permission, she said in an email. Back in 1991, the beloved comedian appeared on Today to discuss aging in the public eye and how Golden Girls opened up opportunities for older actors. You don't fall off the planet once you pass a given age, she said. You don't lose any of your sense of humor, any of your zest for life, or your lust for life, if you will. If you were a dull young person, you're going to be a dull old person, but I don't think just because the years go by that you have to be that way. And there you go. There's some sage advice from Betty White, who just turned 99.
That does sound pretty sage. I like that.
Very good.
Wow.
Well, we have a few minutes left.
We do. Just a few. Well, I'm just... My random thought here, at least about Betty White, is that she's had such a long career. I mean, it's not just a long life. It's a long career. She's managed to stay active for the majority of that life, and it's...
I know. She acted well up into her 90s on series television. I mean, it's not just like a guest role here or there. She was on that... I forget the name of that show with Valerie Bertinelli and a bunch of people.
Is it Hot in Cleveland?
I think so. Yeah, so she was... you know, she's been pretty active. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, an advocate of animals. Right?
She is.
She's a very active animal advocate. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to next year, where we can do another story about Betty White turning 100.
I hope so. I can't wait. That'll be great. That'll be a lot of fun. Anyway, wow. Well, it looks like it's 5:55 right now.
Yeah, we're almost done with the show for this week. You can join us next week. And remember, if you want to be a guest on Random Walk, you can email us at randomwalkhunterdon@gmail.com.
That's right. And you can reach out and touch either of us and at least...
appropriately touch
yes,
us.
Yes, while being socially distant.
Exactly.
Right.
During the time of COVID.
That's right. That's exactly right. So we want everybody to stay safe out there. Anyway, so yes, we will be back next week, same time, 5 p.m. here at WHCR-DB here in lovely downtown Flemington, New Jersey.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Yeah. So I guess we're just about out of here. I think we're going to play some music, and we're going to sign off on the Facebook machine. And I believe this also archives up on the Facebook machine, so if you came in late, you can certainly catch the rebroadcast there as well. So we're going to, I guess it's time to say goodnight.
Goodnight, everyone. I'm Ross Davis.
I'm Victoria Davis.
Join us next week.
Yep, and you've just had a random walk.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com, brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the 100in Medical Center. 100in Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. 100in Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call 100in Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.100inhealthcare.org.